and welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. I'm Paul Dottino. He is Jeff Fiegels, Super Bowl champ Jeff Fiegels, by the way.
That never gets old.
It never does.
Woo!
Kind of like a Hall of Famer, which we got to get on there one day.
Yeah, maybe one day.
I hope so. We're gonna do what we can to get that on there, too. In any event, we're going to be here for the next hour to talk Giants football with you. 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat if you'd like to hit us up on Twitter. He is also at Jay Fiegels.
Yep.
I am at Giants WFAN. And of course, coming up at 12:30 today, we will continue our opponent's look ahead. Today, it is a team that Jeff Fiegels played for, the Seattle Seahawks.
The Hawks.
How many decades ago was that?
That would be, well, I played in the 2000s. Well, one decade ago.
So,
yeah, because
oh,
it was
okay.
2000. I played there from 98 to 02.
Oh, you did play there after 02, after 2000.
Yep.
I thought it was late 90s, but okay.
Yep.
So in
yep.
any event, the Seattle Seahawks will be our opponents. Look ahead today. They'll be playing the Giants on the 22nd of October. It is a game here at MetLife Stadium. And so it is our daily look ahead. And I will tell you this. Over the course of time, the Seahawks have been one of those teams where they've either been really good or really bad.
Yeah.
They're never in the middle.
Yeah. And they're used to, well, they're really really good at home.
Always really good at home.
They haven't played well on the road. A couple of years ago, they weren't very good on the road. But that you know, that team, they're disciplined. They've got a good defense, a lot of good leadership, good organization. So that's why they are the way they are. Pete Carroll keeps those guys going. You know, as much as you see Pete Carroll on the sideline, how, you know, he's just jumping around and it looks like he's having a good time.
Very energetic.
He's very energetic, but I will tell you that he's a very serious guy on the football field.
Oh, I don't doubt that for one second.
And you know, a lot of people remember him from around here when he was with the Jets and things, but obviously his success there wasn't as good as it is in Seattle. But that organization, because I played for him, it's still the same owner, Paul Allen, the Microsoft guy.
Mm-hmm.
They do things the right way, very similar to the Giants in that sense. Not as good as the Giants, but very similar.
You didn't have like little tablets and laptops in those days, though, did you?
No.
Playbook was still a playbook.
Yeah, playbook was still a playbook. Yeah, no. And, you know, and we're going to never, Paul, you and I are old-timers. We're never going to get over the notion that when we say playbooks, we're never going to say
no.
iPads or
no.
or whatever they are. They're playbooks.
They're tablets now, right?
They're tablets.
Yeah, right?
Well, yeah, tablets.
I think so.
You're not going to get that. It's
no.
always going to be the playbook.
What is the other thing they call? Is it Nook? Is that another one of those things? Oh, that's only for a book, right?
Oh, the Nook.
The Nook?
Yeah, that's a tablet.
That's only for
that's
a book,
tablet
though.
With a book.
Right. Oh my goodness. Anyway, 201-939.
Are you the same way at home that I am, that if I have anything tech, I mean, I'm okay on the computer, right? But I'll tell you what. I mean, I just switched when I switched my jobs from the real estate stuff. I went to a company that works with Microsoft, and their operating system is Windows, and I'm an Apple guy.
So I'm a Windows guy.
And see, with Apple, you can drag to the end of the earth. You can drag things everywhere
yes,
in Apple.
Yes.
Windows a little different. It's just, you know.
That's right. You got a MacBook.
Yeah, and I just drag. But with my computer at work, it's Windows, and it's a little bit of a learning curve, and it drove me nuts for about 2 months. Now I can see why everybody likes it. It's a very powerful operating system.
Very good.
Look at me with the technical term operating system.
You know. I'm just – look, he was a technician as a putter, and now he's learning how to be a technician on the computer. This is good. Progress.
And listen, I'm getting so excited because, I don't talk about my family that much on the show, but I'm just – my son, as we all know, is going to Miami, and we are leaving Saturday morning to go out to school. He's going to summer school. He starts on Monday. They're checking in. And, you know, for all those that don't know, I went to the University of Miami.
No.
And 30
Did
years
you really?
Ago. Well, there might be some new people. But kind of follow me with this is that it's very strange because I remember so vividly 30 years ago or more getting ready to go to Miami and going down there. And now here we are, you know, taking my youngest son down. It's very, very, very cool and very just surreal. It's going to be. It's incredible, and I just can't wait. And it's just, you know, when I was there for his recruiting trip, the university has built up a little bit, but a lot of the stuff in the football area is still the same, believe it or not. They're going to be tearing a lot of it down, but it's just really an amazing thing that's just going to happen here. And this is a big year for the Feagles family as far as reunions.
Oh.
Because we all know 10 years ago we won the Super Bowl in 07 with the Giants, but
yep.
What a lot of people don't know that 30 years ago, yeah, I said 30, the 1987 national champions was the Miami Hurricanes. And we are celebrating our 30-year anniversary this year against Syracuse. They picked a good game.
But the Orange Bowl isn't there anymore.
Orange Bowl's gone. Orange Bowl's gone, and they play out at Hard Rock Stadium is what it's called now, where the Dolphins play. And what's really cool about that stadium is they put a roof over it.
I've heard.
And 94% of the stands are covered.
Pretty wild.
Huh? Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, it's cool in a sense, cool. Like, it's shaded.
Oh, I know.
I've heard. Not cool.
I think it looks cool, too.
It looks like a spaceship. So, and Zach, my son Zach, is excited about it because it doesn't get too windy in there. That stadium used to get really windy in there.
Even better.
Yeah, so they put a little roof in it. All right, so enough of that stuff. We got a lot to talk about today.
And we already have callers on the line.
Well, typically when I get on the show, there's a lot of callers.
Wow. Wow.
I'm just going there. Listen, I'm early. It's Wednesday. I'm usually here on Fridays, but because the organization wanted to give everybody off for a couple, Fridays for the whole month.
Yes. So this means like earlier in the week, you're more energized than you usually are on Friday.
No, I'm up there on Friday. I've just got to get it going. I'm taking my Friday attitude and bringing it to Wednesday.
We're going to the phones.
Go ahead.
AJ in Carolina, you're on line one. Hello.
What's up, AJ?
Thanks for taking my call.
What's up, my man?
Nat Burhe, will he be ready for a training camp?
I think Nat Burhe, it's going to be, coming off those concussions. That's we'll see.
He's competing for a job right now, and he's on the Giants 90-man roster. But as Jeff just said, the magic word is concussions. You don't fuss around with those things, yeah. And it's not going to take much for him. To have to deal with the medical people, and if they say no, it's no.
No, no.
Yeah. I mean,
I just want him to stay healthy.
Sure, we all want him to stay healthy as a person. Never mind as a football player. I don't want to see him get hurt at all.
Right.
Is that it?
Thanks for our goal.
Yeah.
I say the Giants' offense going to improve this season.
You hope.
Yes.
Well, that's the idea, They brought in competition on the offensive line. They brought in a pass-catching tight end. They brought in a very tall, skyscraping wide receiver. Yeah, the hope is that they'll be better on offense. Sure.
I think
appreciate the phone call. It sounds like you're breaking up on us. Thank you, AJ. Please call again. Jeff, the one thing that, I know we were all excited about when we watched some of the spring sessions and the OTAs and the mini camp and stuff, is that Brandon Marshall provides that Plexico Burris-like target for Eli Manning. And you know how important that was for Eli in that 2007 season. To have that skyscraper, the guy who has the long catch radius, the big box, if you will, to throw the ball in, it makes such a difference to a quarterback.
Well, because, the other thing, too, is his ability to make plays within the goal line. Little slants, little two-yard hitch, just to catching the football. And he's a big guy. He's hard to bring down. But from a quarterback perspective, you got a tall target. Eli loves the tall targets. You go back to, Kevin Boss. You go back to Plaxico, a lot of these guys he likes to throw to. If Eli's going to miss, he misses high.
Right.
And so when you got a guy like him that can go up and get it, not to mention – Evan Engram, who's another big target in the red zone. So, but I really like – I heard Brandon Marshall on the radio yesterday when I was driving out to Long Island. And he's impressed me. I think that he knows his role here. I think that he understands that people are doubting his ability at his age, so which I think is a good thing for him because he says, there's the guys that don't think I can do it anymore. That tells me that he wants to do it. And I think that he's going to be a nice addition to that to that room. And what I mean by that room is that meeting room when all those receivers are in there. Because that's if you want to be a fly on a wall, that's the room you want to be in.
They'll really be looking up to him.
Of all the years that I played, the receiver room is one that you would love to just sit there and listen. because it's sometimes it's a joke.
He made a comment sometime in the last 48 hours, and I don't know the venue or how it came out, but he made a comment that apparently he contacted Eli just this week and asked Eli if he would FaceTime him. And I guess that's like a video phone call. I don't know enough about that. But apparently he wants to go over the playbook again with Eli, even though they're not allowed to be at the facility right now. This is a dark period for the players. He's like all in with getting with his quarterback. And that's pretty good stuff.
Well, he wants to be, when he gets to training camp, there he doesn't want to have a learning curve. He wants to when that play's calling the huddle, he wants to know what to do. And, you know, he's going to take advantage of his reps, and then the better that Eli Manning and Brandon Marshall can get on the same page, they're going to go through that playbook, and he's probably got some questions. You know, if we're in this coverage and this is this, what do I do here? Because I think I do this, but I wasn't really sure coming out of minicamp. Go over a couple things.
And if I may add one small thing before we get back to the callers, you know, the fact that Odell Beckham Jr. was periodically in and out during the course of the spring, all right, and then wasn't here for OTAs, that meant more throws from Manning to Marshall.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, that was the silver lining that nobody talked about, because Brandon Marshall's the new kid on the block. Even though he's old, okay, he's a veteran, he's experienced, he is still the new kid on the block. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that he and Eli spent more concentrated time together and got a chance to throw more balls between each other, because the number one receiver wasn't here the whole time. I don't think that's necessarily terrible.
Well, no, it's not. I think that it's a good thing, to be honest with you. And Brandon even mentioned in the interview he was doing yesterday, he had a little bit of time with Eli Manning in Hawaii when they were at the Pro Bowl together. So, you know, he kind of got to know him a little bit. He respects him. He understands that he's a hard worker. He's a funny guy. We know that about Eli. But, you know, he's a serious guy. And he wants his people, if you will, to be on the same page. And what better time, like you said, if he wants to FaceTime him, they want to get together somewhere and just go over that playbook. That shows you his passion and his desire. The guy's never made the playoffs, Brandon Marshall.
Well, we had the same thing here from Rashad Jennings last year, who basically almost cried when the Giants made it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you look at Brandon Marshall and the type of player he's been throughout his career, you think that he would have made it to the at least to the playoffs one time. But I think he'll make it to the playoffs this year. I think that he's got a good chance. And really, when you talk about that offense and those weapons and the additions that they have, that they've made to the team, it's going to be quite the the game plan going in, how you're going to stop some of these guys. But, you know, one thing about a wide receiver is that, you know, you're only as good as the other guy on the other side of the field. You know, so if you got Odell Beckham, you know, they're double teaming him, they're going to double team him. Marshall on the other side, you know, these guys are going to have a play to make. And not only that, they still have to cover Shepard. You know, they're not going to be doubling Shepard.
And Ingram.
And Ingram.
And on third down, Shane Vereen.
So you're going to pick your poison. So they're going to be, and I'll tell you what's going to happen when you think about all of those weapons that we just talked about, Paul. Six men in the box, that's going to do wonders for the Giants running game.
Supposed to.
Well, it should. It should. And it'll take a little pressure off that offensive line that everybody's, you know, complaining about. So just it's addition of just a couple guys can all of a sudden change the whole philosophy of if defensively for a team like the Giants that you're going against.
Well, you know, it doesn't take much to understand the benefit of having a Marshall, because remember how much the Giants offense suffered at the end of the 2008 season after Plexico was out of the lineup. That one factor caused a domino effect on the entire offense.
Yeah.
And you certainly remember that well. Let's go back to the phones. Christian, you are on line four. Hello.
Hey, guys.
How you doing?
I have to say that I'm getting real sick of all the credit that goes to Dak Prescott, because he hasn't been in the driver's seat yet for that offense. He's in the passenger seat
Okay,
Elliott,
but you know what?
Offensive line
gives him
5 seconds to pass the ball.
I can't let you go there. You know why? Because it doesn't matter how perfect the situation is. If you don't go in there and execute, it will not work. He deserves credit for doing what he had to do. No matter what the situation was, he got it done. And I grant you, it was an easier situation than maybe some other quarterbacks have had, but he still got it done. You're not gonna sit there and diss him. I can't let you do that. The guy was really good.
Well, he definitely has a bright future. I'll never take that from him. But when you have 5 seconds to throw the ball and your running back is almost rushing for what you're passing for, I mean, wouldn't it be more telling to see him in a Carson Wentz situation where, yeah, Wentz did have a run game, but he was actually taking over some games. And I don't feel like I saw Dak Prescott take over a single game himself.
But did he have to?
No.
Exactly. So it's too early to...
Well, yeah, that's the point. Listen, I'll be the first one to tell you, both times going into the Dallas game last year, I thought the Giants had the better matchup, and I predicted the Giants to win. In fact, I guaranteed it both times. So, and I'm very, very glad to say that, okay? But here's what I will say. Dak Prescott had a dynamite rookie season, and there's nothing you could do to take that away from him. Having said that, I don't know that he's going to win a Super Bowl. I don't know that. We'll find out over the course of the next several years. I will tell you this, okay? I will tell you this. I like his skill set better than I ever liked Colin Kaepernick's skill set. I would think he's got a better future than he does.
Well,
than he did.
Well, yeah, because he's got a better team.
Well, that too.
He's definitely going to be a good quarterback, but
anyway,
it's too early to try to call him a top 20 quarterback. It's just too early. He has so much around him that he's in the passenger seat in that offense, and it's.
I tell you what,
let's see how he does this year.
If he has a sophomore slump, and Dallas is not going to be as good this year as they were last year.
Well, all the Cowboy fans think they are.
Well, they're fools, and they're making a mistake. Dallas is coming back. In fact, they may just be a 500 team, but regardless. Talk to us next year, and then we'll kind of measure out a little bit what Prescott did over the first 2 years and give you a better gauge.
I appreciate the call. Yeah, I
appreciate
the call, too. I think that there's a lot of guys that have the sophomore slumps. I don't think Dak Prescott is going to have that type of – because I just think he's too disciplined, and I think that he's a good player. I don't think he's going to be out there and rest on his laurels. I would say that Zeke Elliott would have more of a sophomore slump than Dak Prescott in my –
Well,
those reasons that I just said.
They've made two changes, though, on the offensive line,
yep.
Which will have an impact on Elliott
and to some degree,
Prescott.
Which is he was a holding machine, but, you know.
And Leary's gone.
And Leary, yeah.
So that's two out of five that they've had to replace. It will impact that team. And let's not forget, the entire NFC East has got themselves a whale of a schedule situation because they're playing the AFC West this year, which is – arguably, those are the two best divisions in football.
Yeah.
And that also means West Coast trips, too, which
the
also
Cardinals are
going
to be better. They're going to be better. They were hurt last year. You know the Seahawks, who we're going to talk about soon?
Oh, no, AFC West.
Oh, I'm sorry, AFC
Denver,
West. Oh, okay.
Oakland, Chargers, Chiefs.
Okay. Yeah.
These are tough teams.
Yeah, yeah. That's right, it's AFC. I meant to.
Yeah. And each of the NFC East teams has to make at least two trips out to the West Coast. These are all factors. And let's not forget, there's now a full season of Dak Prescott film for every defensive coordinator to study, too.
Well, that always makes a difference.
Sure.
But I think he'll be fine. I think the Cowboys are going to take a step back, in my opinion. Not
a
huge one, but I think the whole division as a whole has gotten so much better across the board that it's going to be a very, very competitive NFC East this year.
All right. Rick, you're on line three. Hello. Rick, hello.
Hi. Yes, Paul and Jeff, good afternoon.
What's happening, Rick?
Look, Vic, not Rick, Vic.
Right. Oh, the computer says Rick, but okay, Vic, we apologize.
Come on, Paul, you know me better than
that. Well, I recognize your voice. I wasn't sure if maybe you had a twin somewhere.
Yeah, right. speaking of the Cowboys, okay,
yes.
Why in the world do we have to open up every single year against Dallas in Dallas? Is Jerry Jones paying the schedule makers off or what?
That's a good question. I don't have an answer to it.
That burns me up.
All right.
Why don't we open up at Met Stadium?
Vic, I can't answer that because I don't know. But here's what I will tell you, okay? If you are a Giants fan this year, the one thing that you should absolutely love is that you're playing Dallas in week one on the road. Why? Very simple. Dallas is going to have six new starters on defense that did not start the playoff game at the end of last season. Most of these guys are in their first or second years, which means that defense is going to be a mess, running around like a chicken without a head off, okay? I think it's going to take them at least a month. Experience tells us that defenses that are totally rebuilt, especially with young guys, it's not till October till they have any idea what they're doing, okay? So that's half a team right now. The Giants should be able to beat up on the Cowboys in week one. And if you will buy my premise, what a great thing it is to beat Dallas in Dallas opening day, get it out of the way, and take their home field advantage and throw it in the trash bin, because that means at the end of the season, Dallas has to come to the Giants when the game will matter the most, and you will then have home field advantage for what could be a very significant matchup. Why would you not be happy about this? Because you should be thrilled.
No, I'm going to tell you, Vic, I'm going to answer it for you, because it happens every single year, and that's what Vic's saying. Why is if they're not, he doesn't get, you know,
complain
care about playing
next year.
No, but he doesn't complain about playing the Cowboys. He complains about having the first game at home rather than on the road.
But see, right. If the game was home, that means at the end of the season you'd have to go to Dallas.
Okay, Captain Obvious. Of
when
course.
They're probably playing better.
You don't know that don't, either.
Well, look. Vic, this is the wrong year to complain about it.
It doesn't matter. By the end of the season, if we go to Dallas, we already won the East division anyway. We're going to win the Eastern division. And, Paul, let me ask you one more question before I forget. Whatever happened to Will Beatty? They re-signed him, 2 years ago? Then I haven't heard any more about
him. He's a street free agent.
They re-signed him last year, not 2 years ago.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Street free
agent.
Okay,
that's all I wanted to know.
What happened to Will Beatty? Our friend Charlie will know where Will Beatty is. I promise you that. He'll probably call it.
Actually, we know where he's at Charlie's house for dinner.
All right.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Jeff, have a nice guy. Have a nice day, guys.
You too.
You got a great show. I'll be talking to you again. And let me tell you one more thing. The Giants are going to win the Super Bowl.
Woo!
Period. End the conversation.
I love
Bye-bye.
It. I love it.
Way to go, Vic. 201-939-4513. Line one is Rayvon from Virginia. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Jeff and Paul?
What
is Rayvon? What is up?
What's up? Nothing much, man. I figured today, I'm getting outside. I'm at work. I'm sorry, gentlemen. Get away from the noise. Paul, if we had a lot more Giants fans that thought like you did in regards to the Cowboys' first game of the season, we'd be a lot better off. I thought the same thing. Same exact thing.
It's really not that hard to decipher. To me, it's the best case scenario.
Right, right. And what better thing today with having Jeff on the show than to talk about special teams and the special teams unit?
Let's go. Now, let's talk about it.
Let's go. You know, now, what everyone wants to talk about how, you know, our defense is looking good. Offense looking real good. Special teams is kind of forgotten about. Now, I don't know too much on the field as far as with Aldrick Rosas, but I like him. I like that he has a strong leg. I can't remember the last time we had a kicker that could kick, you know, as deep as he can kick, basically. But how do we feel about Dwayne Harris?
Well, I think Dwayne Harris is a guy we know. You know what you're going to get out of Dwayne Harris if he's healthy. You know, you're going to get a big play here. You're going to get 10 yards on a punt return. You're going to get a tough dude that can play every game. And you're going to get a reserve wide receiver if you need him. Look at what happened 2 years ago. He got pulled out of the returning because they needed him from the receiver position. But Dwayne Harris is a guy. He took a pay cut. Exactly. So he wants to be here. He's your guy that's going to, you know, he's going to go. He's going to have some competition in training camp. He really is. So when you look at, you know, I wouldn't guarantee that Dwayne Harris is going to be on the team or not be on the team. I think there will be an amazing competition going for those fourth and fifth and sixth position roster spots in the wide receivers this year, because you got Rudolph coming in from Florida State, who is my sleeper, by the way, this year.
I agree with you.
And that's a guy that's going to – and he can return kicks. He can return punts. So
he played defensive back in high school too.
Oh, did he really? I didn't know that. Okay,
he did.
Yeah, wow, that's neat. So I think that Dwayne Harris is a guy. Just what I said. He's a tough dude. He's gonna be competing for a roster spot this year.
I agree. Very tough. And like you said, the first year, I mean, he was amazing. The first year we got him, even though a lot of people think that we signed him for too much. But like I said, he came in, he spelled for us receiving, had a pretty good season for what, fourth wide receiver on the team.
Yeah, but remember what he did on special teams that year? He had a punt return and a kickoff return for a touchdown.
He averaged 28 yards that year, kickoff return. He averaged 10 yards punt return. He returned a touchdown against Dallas, kickoff return, and he returned a punt return versus the New York Jets, I believe.
Here's the thing. He plays all the special teams units.
Yeah.
And he's good at all of them.
Right.
Yep.
It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Because those end of the roster guys, your fifth receiver, your sixth receiver, if they have one, those are the guys they have to play special teams. Your seventh, sixth linebacker, whatever it is, those are the guys that play special teams. Your fourth tight end, if he makes the team, has to play special teams.
And here's the beauty of it.
Wayne Gallman, the running back this year, he's going to have to play special teams.
The beauty of what Dwayne Harris does is he doesn't give any of those special teams duties lip service. He gives you 150% on every single snap.
Because he knows his value to the team is there.
We agree that his value is still good.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely. And one more thing, I'm going to get off the air with this. Because one person that did come on last year as far as being a gunner on special teams that I've seen was Roger Lewis Jr. And we all know what happened to him earlier in the offseason. I haven't heard too much of anything about him in regards to finishing up minicamp or anything. If you guys could speak on him, and I'll take that off the line. Thank you, fellas.
Well, okay. I think Paul can probably talk more about Roger Lewis because he was out of more of the practices. I'd only went to two or three of the things that were around here, but he had a promising year last year. I think that guy, looking up for him, but he's another guy that has to play special teams.
Well, here's the thing: Roger Lewis is keeping a very low profile because of the offseason.
Yeah, well, he has to
situation that he had, so he's being smart about that now. He's going to have to go out in training camp because his spot is not solidified. He's going to have to compete, and he's going to have to win it. And it's just that simple. I mean, there's really nothing else to say.
Well, you had him making the team last year, okay?
Yes, I did.
And
yes, I did.
A lot of people didn't. So he's really going to be in the same situation as he was last year. And he's got a lot more to prove now with what happened this offseason. So, guys have to understand that, you're always being evaluated, both on and off the field, and you got to be careful with everything you do.
All right, we go to Lawrence on line three. You're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Got a couple minutes before we get to our guest. Hello.
What's up, Lawrence?
Oh, hi, Hal. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Where are you at in Florida?
I'm down in Melbourne Beach.
Melbourne Beach. All right.
Nice area.
Sounds good. Yeah.
But anyway, just before we get my question, I wanted to ask Paul, does he remember the last guy that was a defensive lineman and he became an offensive lineman, number 68?
JT Turner?
Yeah, JT Turner.
Yeah, he lived in Westwood, New Jersey.
Yeah.
He was a Bergen County guy.
There's some rookie that was on the defensive line. They're trying to move him over to the offensive line. I was reading about that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm forgetting his name offhand.
Gerard, something with a J. Gerard Jones.
Jones, yes, yes, yes. They gave him some snaps on the other side of the line of scrimmage during the minicamp, and when Coach McAdoo was asked about it, he said, look, the more you can do, the better. If the guy's willing to be versatile and is willing to go into one of the workout periods and try the other side of the ball, we're going to do it just to see if he can do it. Why not?
How do you do it,
But anyway, my main question is I want to ask this one that Jeff was there. How come in the old days they used to have the backup quarterback used to hold on the field goal attempts? And
yeah.
I think that was better because now you can do the fake, and now they always have the punter.
Yeah.
How come they switched?
Well, I think couple reasons. It's a good question. Number one, the snapping wasn't as good back then, and they wanted the quarterback to be able to react if something bad happened. They ran a lot more fakes back in the day than they do now. Just fake field goals really don't work much anymore. And the real reason they don't do it anymore is because there's a snapper and there's a punter and a kicker on every team. Those are the three specialists. They are off to the side when everybody else is running plays, and they're working on their craft, snapping, holding, and kicking. They can work collectively together for hours upon hours, where in the old days, I remember when I first came into the league, the quarterback was the holder, and you would have to yank him off the field after practice was over just to get some holds in. Mm. So, you know, they didn't get to practice it a lot. So that's why today they don't do it anymore. Look at Tony Romo, too. So
okay, I guess. But I still kind of like the idea that that guy can throw a pass.
Yeah, well, I like that idea, too, because they can throw it better than the punters, that's for sure.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Thanks, Lawrence. Have a good day.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I know Jeff could throw because I saw him throw it.
I could throw it.
I just never got
the opportunity. I begged and pleaded with Coach Coughlin. I wanted to throw a fake field goal.
Dave Jennings used to beg to let them
run
a fake.
Nobody lets us do it.
You know, what are you going to do? Hey, it's time to preview our opponents. Look ahead with the Seattle Seahawks on deck. They'll be playing the Giants coming up on October the 22nd. It's a home game here at MetLife Stadium. And we bring in from KJR Radio in Seattle, Dave Softy Mailer. And, of course, he knows Jeff from years ago in Seattle.
What's
how you doing?
Up?
What's happening, Jeffrey Fiegels? You guys may not know. I think, Jeff, did you play with the Seahawks in three different stadiums, Kingdome, Husky Stadium,
yes,
and then what used to be Quest Field?
It went in that order. And particularly it went from basically great to horrible to good. Dave.
Great for a punter. Well, the Kingdome was great for a punter.
Oh, it was beautiful.
The stadium was awful for a punter.
Oh, my goodness.
And I would say the Quest Field was just okay for a punter.
Exactly. And I'll never forget playing over there in Husky Stadium. We had 10 home games, including the two preseason games. It rained 9 out of 10 games our first year in Washington Stadium. It was ridiculous, and it was windy,
cold. I don't think there's anybody left in the NFL that played a game at the Kingdome. That was 99. Jeff was part of the team that played the final game ever at the Kingdome against the Dolphins in the playoffs and Dan Marino. And then Mike Holmgren took a flamethrower to the roster and blew everything up the next year. But there's like two guys left in baseball, I think, that played a game at the Kingdome, Carlos Beltran and Bartolo Colon. And Jeff is one of the guys that played the last game as a football player there. So
that's
how about
awesome.
That for some Wednesday?
That's a great lead-in.
That is outstanding, Softy. And, you know, I will tell you, I was at the Kingdome in 95 when the Giants lost the game there. Dave Brown was the quarterback, had a great comeback, and Brad Deluiso missed like a 52-yard or 55-yard field goal at the gun, and the Giants lost the game, came up short. But I got to tell you something. That was such a dingy building.
Loud.
It was so
dumb.
It was loud, but it was so dark and cold.
I didn't care.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, I felt like I was in a mausoleum. You know, it was just so cement-filled and just miserable. Oh, yeah. I didn't like it very much.
Well, but it was loud, though, right?
It
may have been cement-filled. But, well, first of all, the 95 season wasn't a great season for the Seahawks. I mean,
it wasn't a great season for the Giants,
the
either.
The Ken Behring era, all that stuff. The guy tried to move the football team. If you would have come in the 80s, man, or maybe even the late 70s, you would have seen a much different atmosphere. But, listen, it was a dump. But, damn it, it was our dump, for crying out loud.
I got you. All right, Softy, let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks team that's going to be playing the Giants this season. They'll be coming east for that ball game. Let's start with the obvious, and I'm going to go away from the roster for just a minute and talk about what happened with the Marshawn Lynch deal, because there are still a lot of people who can't believe that this happened. Others who said, well, it was destined anyway because he was from Oakland, and obviously he had to wind up with the Raiders. I'll be honest with you, man. Without Marshawn Lynch there, I just don't see the same Seahawks team, and I know it's already a year removed. But when he was there, that was an entirely different animal when I looked at the Seahawks as to what I look at now.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was, still the most impactful player in the history of the franchise. I mean, no disrespect to Steve Largent, Cortez Kennedy, Russell Wilson, Sherman, Earl Thomas, whatever, but he brought an identity to Seattle that we'd never had before, and he totally changed the perception of what that franchise was all about. So, I mean, go back and look at the 2014 rushing numbers in the NFL. team rushing stats, where the Seahawks were averaging about 172, 173 yards a game, and then go back and look at where they were last year. They've gone from number one in the NFL, guys, in 2014 to 25th overall, and they've lost about 75 yards a game on the ground. That's over 1,000 yards. They basically lost the production that Le'Veon Bell gave Pittsburgh last year, okay?
Yeah.
From a stats perspective. So they've gone from number one to 25. They totally lost their identity. They were asking for more from Russell Wilson, sitting in the pocket behind a not very good to below average offensive line. He got banged up in part because of it. They couldn't run the ball. Nobody was healthy. And it was a major issue. And to me, it's the major issue in 2017. If they can't find a way to at least be average. And what I'm asking for them to do is kind of what I ask out of the Mariners offense every year. Just don't suck, okay? If the rushing game doesn't suck, if they're just an average running attack, they should be okay. But they couldn't even get to that point a year ago. So, yeah, they're missing Marshawn Lynch big time.
Well, now, of course, they brought in Eddie Lacy, and he's got the weight clauses in his contract. We've all heard about that. And I guess if he doesn't get the rock going, you're not going to get your wishes.
Well, unless Thomas Rawls can stay healthy. I mean, go back and look at the end of the 2015 season, the last seven or eight games before he got hurt in the Baltimore game. Thomas Rawls was on some kind of tear. I mean, he really was. Even in that Raven game when he got hurt on the first drive of the game, it looked like he might run for 500 yards that day. So, you know, now that he's got maybe even more motivation with Eddie Lacy being here, C.J. Procise, the second-year guy from Notre Dame, flashed a bit last year, I thought. But the issue with all three of those guys, they can't stay healthy, okay? I mean, between the three of them, so between Eddie Lacy, Thomas Rawls, and C.J. Procise, those guys missed 28 games combined. Are you kidding me? A year ago, Lacy in Green Bay and Rawls and Procise in Seattle. So I don't have a lot of faith that they can find one guy to stay healthy for 15, 16 games. They might be doing this by committee again this year, man.
Well, I would think that Eddie Lacy's going to be the guy. I mean, even if you go with a two-headed monster with Rawls in there,
yeah,
too. But, you know, really, when I was starting to look at the Seahawks for our show today, there was some glaring things on the paper. And it's a lot like what's going on here in New York, is that the offensive line seems to be the culprit of everything here. And you guys, the Seahawks, they lose a couple guys this year. You know, Gary Gilman leaves and goes to San Francisco, although you go out and you get two free agent signs in Luke Jokel and Odey Abushi. I guess that's how it's pronounced, his name. Talk a little bit, Dave, about the offensive line. We know they're going to have to do something to complement that running game behind them. What do you see in the offensive line, and who do you think is going to be there on the starting day this September?
Well, I mean, here's the thing, Jeff. You know from playing how important continuity is, right, for an offensive line, having those five guys playing together, knowing what the other guy's going to do before he does it, cadences, signals, alignment, all that stuff. And so let's go back to 2015 to the 2016 season. They brought one guy back in the same position he was at the year before. They brought nobody back. So from 2015 to 2016, they had five guys in five new spots from the previous season. Okay? Now let's go from 16 to this year. They're going to bring one guy back in the same spot he was in last year, and that's the center, Justin Britt. Jermaine Effetti is going to move over to right tackle. You're going to bring Luke Jokel in, the left tackle from the Jaguars, but play him at left guard. George Fant, for now, is going to be at left tackle, so that might be a second guy in the same spot he was in a year ago. But he's playing his second year of professional football and his second year of organized football since he was in junior high. This guy was a basketball player at Western Kentucky, for God's sakes, and hadn't played football since he was like 12 years old. I'm not kidding you.
Whoa.
I mean, people think I say that stuff, and people think I'm sarcastic. They think I'm trying to be funny. That's exactly the case. George Fant did not play football since he was in junior high up until last year. The Seahawks brought this guy in as a project, and all of a sudden he's your starting left tackle, for crying out loud, on what you think is going to be a Super Bowl caliber football team. So it's not hard to see why the Seahawks had offensive line issues a year ago. I mean, Gary Gilliam taken off to San Francisco, to me that's addition by subtraction. I mean, good riddance. I got no issues with Gilliam walking out of here, and it shows you the dire straits the Niners are in if they're going to bring an offensive lineman from the Seahawks to help them out. So what they need is Jermaine Effetti, the second-year guy, to pop at right tackle. They need Justin Britt to become a Pro Bowl caliber starting center at the signal caller spot. He was an alternate last year. I need the guy to play like that again this year. And they got to pray that they get something out of Luke Jokel, which is concerning. I mean, there's a reason why the Jaguars let this guy walk after being the number two pick in the draft 4 years ago. They paid him $7 million, which still boggles my mind. I can't believe that there was actually somebody out there willing to match that offer or come close to it. Why the Hawks had to spend that kind of money on him is beyond me. But if George Fant, the left tackle basketball player, doesn't take that next step and they don't get something out of Luke Jokel and Jermaine Ifedi can't make the move from right guard to right tackle and figure it out, they might be in trouble again this year.
Softy, I don't want to depress you, but understand this. Tom Coughlin has seen what happens to a football team that does not have a very good line, specifically a very good left tackle. He saw that with the Giants for several years. So he goes to Jacksonville and he lets Jokel walk out the door. What does that tell you about what Luke Jokel is right now? You know what I mean?
It's not very good.
It's not good.
I mean, look, you guys know as well as I, there's a serious dearth of available offensive linemen in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, all Tom Cable, our offensive line coach, who you guys know in Seattle, former coach of the Raiders, all he's done since he showed up here is talk about how college football players aren't ready when they come to the NFL because they don't play with their hand on the ground. They play these crazy spread offenses, and they're not ready to make the jump to the NFL. So they take years to develop. So there is seriously a real lack of available offensive linemen in free agency. And when Luke Jokel's getting $7 million a year, who's been a total bust from Jacksonville, that shows you what the market looks like. So, yeah, I'm concerned about it, man. There's no question. I mean, you got a couple guys on the offensive line. One thing that bugs the hell out of me and drives me nuts, if Jermaine Ifedi in year number two is going to be your right tackle, why wasn't he playing there a year ago? He was playing right guard a year ago. Now, you could say, hey, look, we put him at guard. We made a mistake. We don't want to compound the mistake by keeping him there. Let's move him right now. I get that. But they are seriously behind the eight ball in his development because now they're asking him in year two to move positions again, which is what they did to Justin Britt in year three when he was on position number three. Look, there's a lot of things, guys, the Seahawks are really, really, really good at. We all know that. John Schneider, Pete Carroll, phenomenal. One thing they're not very good at is drafting offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Period.
Man, I am sensing some seriousness out of
you. Would you say something to make him happy?
I mean, I thought that, you know, listen, we do this show out here, and we get diehard just like the Seahawks fans, and the fans out there, they're amazing. They really are. But I am sensing some serious problems with the Seahawks going into this season, which tells me they're probably going to get beat by us, the Giants. But
guys, for me, it's all about finding that run game again. And that
it's going to be difficult.
Guys, you know, with the offensive
line, it's going to be difficult for what you just said.
Pound the rock, give the defense a blow, and keep them fresh. I mean, that Cardinal game in overtime a year ago, that 6-6 classic. You guys may remember that a year ago when both Chandler Catanzaro and Steven Hauschka both missed chip shot field goals to win the game in overtime. The defense was pissed off. I mean, they were not happy about that. I mean, they got guys on the field for 100-plus snaps. They're working their tails off to hold Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald in check, and the offense can't do a darn thing because they can't run the ball. When you become one-dimensional, you're in big-time trouble. I mean, look, if you're going to be one-dimensional and be a passing team, you better be damn good. I mean, like, Aaron Rodgers good, right? I mean, Aaron Rodgers had no running game, and the Packers went to the NFC Championship game a year ago. Hell, they were playing a wide receiver at running back last year in Montgomery.
Yeah.
And they got to NFC title game because they've got Aaron Rodgers. Russell Wilson's good. He's really good, but he's not Aaron Rodgers, and he's not Tom Brady, and that's why he needs a running game.
So let's go to the other side of the ball before somebody has a cardiac arrest here. Dave, so
I'm fine. I'm good.
Oh, yeah, I know you're good. I miss hearing you. I do. I really do. And it's good to talk to you again. Hey, so Dave, so go to the defensive back. So here we are at the beginning of the offseason. Seahawks, okay, Richard Sherman, he's going to trade him. Then he goes to free agency, and then now he's back. Earl Thomas, broken leg last year. He's coming back. There's still, you know, you could see the lack of depth that the Seahawks had when Earl Thomas went out of the lineup last year. So and what do? The Seahawks go and draft three safeties. You know, their big one, is it Delano Hill?
Delano Hall from Michigan. Yeah,
yeah. So talk a little bit about him and tell me a little bit about that secondary of the Seahawks and how they're going to rebound from last year.
Well, I think that they don't want to admit it, and you would never get Pete Carroll or John Schneider to admit anything like this on the record, but I think they're kind of preparing for life after the LOB. I mean, look, you got Richard Sherman, who's 29. Earl Thomas is getting up there in age. This is now his eighth year, amazingly, in the NFL. Cam Chancellor, year number seven. Sherman, year number seven. You got contracts coming up. Cam Chancellor's deal's up after the end of this year. Sherman and Thomas both have 2 years left. So you're talking about, you know, a group that in the next year or so will all be in their 30s or 29 years old. So, yeah, there's no question they are preparing for life after the LOB. And I just think, I mean, look, guys, the Earl Thomas injury was gigantic. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I can look for them if you really want to see them. But I think you get the point that without Earl Thomas, the opponent passer rating went up like 40 points a game. Without Earl Thomas, the number of 20-plus yard passes that opposing quarterbacks were willing to throw doubled, okay? I mean, it was ridiculous. To me, he's the most important player on the defense. I mean, Michael Bennett is phenomenal. He can play inside. He can play outside. Bobby Wagner led the NFL in tackles a year ago. Sherman, top 10 cornerback in the NFL. We all get that. But Earl Thomas allows them to play the defense they play, which lets Cam Chancellor almost turn into a hybrid linebacker, kind of stalking the line of scrimmage, being great against the run, knocking guys out at that second level, like when he took out Demaryius Thomas in the Super Bowl 3 years ago. Without Earl Thomas, they really can't play the type of defense that has made them so good in the last 4 or 5 years. So they got to have him back. But I just think that, yeah, there's no doubt after drafting all those guys, the kid from Colorado, Michigan, Mike Tyson, they drafted a defensive back named Mike Tyson for this secondary. They are preparing at some point for life after the LOB, no doubt.
Well, they also got the third round, the cornerback, Shaq Griffin, who's a big physical corner, a lot like that's what you need. The Seahawks love those big cornerbacks out there.
I think he may start, Jeff, for this football team.
Sure.
I mean, there's a hole at the right corner spot right now. Deshaun Shedd got hurt a year ago. I'm not sure if he'll be available by the opener in Green Bay. Jeremy Lane, to me, is more of a nickelback than he is a starting corner in the NFL.
I agree.
Don't be surprised if you see Shaq Griffin starting at that right corner spot, and they need to fix that problem now.
Well, they've still got Bennett up front. They've still got Averill up front. So there's still some pressure on the passer coming from that defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Michael Bennett is a freak of nature. Like we said, he can play inside. He can play outside. He's also very outspoken with the stuff he does off the field. You guys have all heard about the stuff that Michael Bennett's up to. And Cliff Averill had a phenomenal year ago and doesn't get a lot of coverage because he plays with Sherman, Thomas, Chancellor, Bobby Wagner, and Michael Bennett. But what they're trying to do with the defensive line guys right now is recreate the depth they had on the 2013 team that won the championship at MetLife Stadium. And they may never be able to do that. They were going literally 7-8 deep on that defensive front. I mean, go back and look at the starting lineup from the Super Bowl against Denver. Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett were backups on that team.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding you.
You're
they
right.
were first-year guys, but they were backups on that team. And then 2 years or the next year against New England, which still drives me freaking bananas thinking about that game, the Seahawks are leading 24-14 in the fourth quarter. Cliff Averill gets a concussion, and everything changes for the Patriots, and they win the game with, at that point in time, was the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history until the Falcons choked their lead away this last year. So those guys are huge, but they're Frank Clark, an up-and-coming defensive end out of Michigan. I think he's going to have another just a phenomenal, fantastic year. He's been growing as the years go by. They got the second-year guy to tackle from Alabama. They brought in Malik McDowell from Michigan State to play defensive line as well. They got Tuba Rubin, who they got from the Browns a couple years ago. So they got five or six guys that they really like on that defensive line. And to me, it's more important now than ever because Averill and Bennett, by NFL terms at least, are getting old.
Well, Malik McDowell is probably a guy that's going to get in some of those starting snaps this year, don't you think?
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Yeah. I mean, they love this guy.
And look, I mean, and listen, he probably would have been.
We love him, and there's a reason why he was available in the second round. They say that they would have had the same guy at 25 when they traded out three times to fall back to the early part of the second round. Only issue with Malik is he takes plays off, and I think I want to give him a little bit of a pass on that until I see him play in September because Michigan State, guys, 2 years ago was a Final Four team, and last year they stunk. I think that stuff wears on people. We're going through the same issues who's now with Markelle Fultz, who was the number one pick in the NBA draft out of Washington, they were terrible, okay? They won three games, for crying out loud. At times, his personality shows a guy that isn't really into it, and I think that's because the team is awful, and it wears on people. When you're in the Final Four 1 year, and the next year you're a 4-8 or a 3-9 football team, I think that's going to get to you as a football player, all right? Maybe it shouldn't, but I think human nature says it does. So I'm going to see what happens with Malik this year. But, yeah, Jeff, Paul, if you saw this guy in person, you would think he's Calais Campbell at the age of 22 years old. He is a specimen. The question is his motor going to be there 24-7? Can the guy survive in the NFL? We're going to find out in September against the Packers.
Well, all in all, you look at your division, it's always competitive. I mean, the Seahawks have, you know, been to the playoffs the last 5 years in a row. No seem to think that they're not going to do that again this year. The Cardinals, you know, if they stay healthy, they can give you a run for your money. The Rams are always a team that you can never not show up and play, because they'll come back and beat you. So you really, I have the Seahawks winning this division this year, and you know, I think that they'll pick it up. I think the biggest thing to me about the Seahawks is going to be what we talked about earlier, is that running game and that offensive line. Their defense is good enough to keep them in games. We haven't even touched on we don't have much time to do it, but the receivers, you know, you're getting Lockett back. That's going to help you guys a lot. So, you know, all in all, I think the Seahawks should come out on top of that division this year. What do you think, Paul? You think they're going to be there?
Well, see, I was going to ask Softy this. I'm not that enamored with their wide receiving core. I think Jimmy Graham.
But they get it done, though.
Well, I know, but I still think that Graham is still their important target.
If he can stay healthy.
And that, to me, that's a problem, because if you want to be a true contender, a true elite team, you've got to have more of a threat at receiver than you do at tight end. That's a problem for me, Softy.
Well, all right, well, don't let Doug Baldwin hear you say that.
Yeah, how about it, right?
You, okay?
I mean, seriously.
As Seahawks fans, we want Doug Baldwin to hear you say that, because that stuff is just fuel for them. I mean, look, Doug Baldwin doesn't get the attention he deserves. I think last year he caught 94 balls for 1,100 yards and 7 touchdowns.
I know.
The year before that, he caught 78 for 1,000 yards and 14 touchdowns and had that phenomenal run in the second half of the year. So you're talking about a guy in the last 2 years – 170 catches, 2,200 yards, and 21 TDs. Those numbers are fine. Look, no disrespect to wide receivers. Fix the offensive line first. Protect Russell Wilson.
Exactly.
Give the guy time to throw. And you could throw Jeff Fiegels, Paul DeTino, and Dave Softy Mahler out there at wide receiver, and we'd be fine. Wide receiver position is the least of their concerns. Now, look, getting Jimmy Graham involved in the red zone, totally agree. Massive issue. Has to be fixed. Now, look, they're not going to get the numbers out of him that New Orleans got, because they're not throwing the ball, obviously, as much as Drew Brees did. But they brought him here to be that red zone target, that, you know, guy that can go to the back of the end zone and outleap any defender in the NFL. His red zone numbers have not been good enough in the last 2 years. That's why you signed the guy. He's a basketball player. When he gets into the end zone playing tight end that nobody can cover one-on-one, put the ball 9 feet up in the air and let Jimmy Graham go get it. And they simply put have not done enough of that since he's been here. I'm hoping that changes this season.
All right, Softy, before we let you go, is there a Jeff Fiegel story that is still lingering out in Seattle from his time in the Seahawks that you can give us now? Come on, nobody else is listening.
No.
What do you got?
Any story about what again?
A story about my man Fiegels. Something I can use
okay.
to razz him.
Let's see. Well, I can make something up.
No, I knew. See,
Jeff was an upstanding citizen when he was here.
That's right. Man, keep going. Keep going.
He won a championship, obviously. With the Giants. He was with the Patriots for a while. I think you were with the Eagles. Is that right, Jeff, as well?
Yep, and the Cardinals.
Fiegels played for the Eagles. How about that?
Well, did you give him like $100 to avoid the question?
Softy remembers.
They had the great playoff year in 99 with Mike Holmgren in year number one. You know, I mean, I would love to get Jeff's take on the Vinny Testaverde, Phil Luckett. I thought the helmet was a football game that got Dennis Erickson fired the year before. Remember that game?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. There's not enough time in our show to go over that scenario.
Dave
was an outstanding citizen, and all the kids that grew up in Seattle at that point in time, the 12, 13-year-olds, they all told their moms and dads they wanted Jeff Eagles jerseys, and they, yeah, and they all got them.
I tell you what, Softy, I had an amazing time when I was there in Seattle. You know, we returned to Seattle for 4 years after I came to the Giants. We went back. We had our place out on Whidbey Island, and so yeah, you know, that just goes to show you how much I loved it out there. So all in all, 5 years playing there and 4 years going there in the summer. So, you know, 9 years of my life, was a lot of it was out in Seattle. And I tell you what, there's no place better on earth than Seattle in the summer when I can tee off at 7:30 in the afternoon, in the evening, and get 18 holes in. That's that's killing it right there.
You mean New York in the summer when it's 98 and 1,000% humidity, you're sweating your ass off?
Oh my goodness, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
Don't
believe me.
This? Because I remember, I don't have a time here, but the 2005 game. I still remember, who's the guy that does the play-by-play for the Giants? I'm sorry, his name
Bob
is
Bob Papa.
Yep.
Bob Papa. How many field goals can one guy miss? What's happened to Jay Feely?
I know he did.
He is Dave Softy Mailer from KGR Radio in Seattle, good friend of ours, and we appreciate the time, Softy.
Softy,
be well.
Take care of yourself, man. Good talking to you, and thanks for coming on our show today.
Fun stuff. Fun stuff. Oh, was Craig at quarterback when you were there?
Yeah, Roger Rutner.
Dave.
Dave Craig, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Dave Craig. It was actually Warren Moon, Dave Craig, Hasselbeck, Trent Dilfer, and
you went through that many in your
time
there?
Oh, and Kitna. And Kitna.
Well, you played there 4 years?
John Kitna, five years.
Five years. And you went through that many quarterbacks?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Whew. We had a run of them.
All right. 201-939-4513. We have a few minutes left. We'll take one or two quick calls. If somebody should want to buzz us in, the lines are open. Go ahead.
Do you think Softy gets a little worked up?
He is passionate about Seattle.
He's like you. He's like you and the Giants. Listen, I can tell you right now, that's a guy that does a show out on the radio out there. Okay?
He's a legend.
As you know, as we all know,
he's
there's
a legend.
But
in
there's
Seattle.
Breaks. You know, when you have shows, you have breaks. He got to go for a half hour about the Seahawks with no break. That is legendary for him. No producer telling him, we got to go to break. He went just 30 minutes straight through.
So you mean he enjoyed himself?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. We're lucky that we got three words in. Good questions.
Well, yeah, but the bad news was we kept bringing up problems with the Seahawks, and that got him upset.
It did, but you know what? They're problems. They're real problems. He understands it. He knows the team. He understands what's going on. And really, the problem is their offensive line and their running game. And you know, ever since Marshawn Lynch left that team and the offensive line, as you heard Dave say, there was five new guys that came back that had new positions in 1 year. And look what happened. The running game, and it's just they just were horrible.
All right, I want to go to Twitter for a second.
Yeah, let's get some Twitter.
We do have an opportunity. People wanting to know here. I am Will Reese. The Seahawks going to give the Giants a problem. They are no pushover team. Thinks the Giants won a close game, though.
Well, they're not a pushover team because they're a disciplined team, okay? Like we said earlier, and Pete Carroll and that staff, their defense, and Michael Bennett, all these guys that can play from football now. Listen, that team, they are getting old on the defense, the legend of doom, but I tell you what, they've got some good players. Bobby Wagner is just an insane linebacker who makes plays everywhere. So that will be a tough game. The Giants play them at home, which is good. They have to come all the way out here. When is that? October. I don't know when the time change
22nd,
goes.
22nd, and it's a 425.
It's probably
game.
Right around that time when we change our clocks. Isn't it around October? Isn't that when we do it?
The Seahawks are coming off a bye week, by the way.
Oh, they are.
Coming to the Giants.
Seems like Giants play all these teams that come off byes all the time. Remember last year? What was it? However many teams there were last year that the Giants played that came off of byes. It was more than any other team in the NFL.
Three or four?
I think it might have been four or five.
Yeah, it might have been. A ridiculous number. Let's see if we had another Twitter question here. No, we just got people retweeting our comments. We don't have anybody with a Twitter question.
Well, real quickly, folks, too, for everybody that's listening and tuning in the show, you know, you can go to Giants.com. The schedule is out for the training camp. So you want to make sure that you know when the public can come. Not every practice is open to the public, folks. So you have to understand you need to come out on the days that are open to the public.
Well, and we should explain the reason for that is there are things that are happening on the Meadowlands property, whether it's the racetrack or the parking lot or
concerts,
the stadium.
Yeah.
And they can't have, for crowd control purposes, people flooding to Giants practice when there's an event going
right.
on at the Sports Authority property. So that's why some of the practices will be closed, even though they're here and we have to be here. Just check the dates as they are listed on Giants.com. Final thought, programming note, the Giants will be off on Fridays during the month of July up until training camp. So just want to let you know, just a little heads up, Big Blue Kickoff Live. We will be back tomorrow. We'll be previewing the Los Angeles Rams on tomorrow's opponent's look ahead, and then we'll be taking Friday off all the way up until when the Giants players get back and report for their first practice on July 28th. But we will be here Monday through Thursday outside of the week of July 4th.
Right, next week.
Another little asterisk, that week is a closed week at the Giants facility.
Vacation.
There will be no show at all.
Or the vacation time.
I hope I did not confuse people with that.
Basically, guys, no shows on Friday up until training camp.
Yes.
No shows next week, and we'll be here until Thursday this week. There you go.
I like that. Yes. He's Jeff Eagles. I'm Paul Dottino. We'll see you next time.